Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the SmackDown preview. I'm Michael Hamford from What Culture and I'm joined by Phil Chambers from What Culture to look ahead to tonight's episode of Friday Night SmackDown. But before we get into that, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. We review Raw, SmackDown, AEW, Dynamite, NXT, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtables, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. Thank God that is like doing the Krypton Factor assault course.
But I love how you had to kind of psych yourself up. Like you took a little pause and you're like, okay, and here we go.
He's got a switch on the back for him to do that, you know. Like it's just
it's like a pull card.
He's Woody from Toy Story when it comes to that spiel, man. Honestly, I'm joined by Phil Chambers, as you just heard the voice of there, to look ahead to tonight's show. Phil, you're very much the Big Mac of Smacky D's here at WhatCulture.com. A challenging episode of SmackDown last week, I thought, a bit of a break from the norm. Before we get into previewing this week's, I just wondered, like, some brief thoughts on last week's episode on what should have been, obviously, their traditional fallout from Hell in a Cell. A lot of it, other than the main event sequence, very much like felt like they were still on pause despite the big changes ahead.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. I think, especially coming off Hell in a Cell, like, it's Hell in a Cell. It should be a big blow off to feuds and like end it and then move on. And a lot of it felt like it was just kind of there just to get through it more than anything else. And then sort of a difficult place on TV, like even the Roman stuff, like it felt like they kind of jumped the gun a little bit with the Jey Uso stuff. Like it was 1 week they were at odds. And then the next week, I like the Jimmy Uso stuff, like going missing to keep the bit of intrigue in. But then like Jey was acknowledging Roman and then they kind of carried that on. Obviously, last week as well. But I thought even that like was probably the first little sort of wobble that we've seen in that storyline since Roman Reigns came back. But other than that, it's been like the Bayley match. Like I enjoyed the intergender match thing that they had. But it just feels like the same stuff that we've seen ages and just an excuse to keep doing it somehow. It just feels like the show in general kind of lacked a little bit of focus last week.
Yeah, I think it's the reason why they're running six commercials per pay-per-view to buy tickets for the new shows rather than just running good angles to sell tickets instead. You touched on Roman Reigns there. Obviously, currently as it stands, Jey Uso is AWOL, but yeah. Jimmy is seemingly pledging his loyalty to Roman. He doesn't want to be his bitch, was his words. Like, he got last week's bitch. But he's willing to support him, whether or not he's trying to play a long game here. We don't know. But if he is playing a long game, then he took a hell of a beating for it last week because, of course, we had the surprise return of Edge. He ploughed Jimmy through a barrier and almost got he got his hands on Roman, but he didn't quite get enough of him, didn't quite get all he wanted. And then after that surprise return, we were given the announcement that it would indeed be Roman Reigns versus Edge at Money in the Bank. WWE aren't promoting much for SmackDown tonight, but one of the things obviously they're leaning heavy on is the return of Edge, is how Roman Reigns is going to respond and the news of this match. What's your thoughts on all of that? And I guess specifically the fact that they're doing Edge and Roman now as, like, I think it's fair to call it the first big main event of the new crowd era, the return to the old new normal. I guess they're going with Edge and Roman as their first big showpiece for that.
Yeah, I don't think you can beat a kind of marquee match for fans coming back than Edge versus Roman. Obviously, we all kind of expected it to happen at WrestleMania and then all the Daniel Bryan stuff got in the way. Which at first I was kind of well, this is strange. But then as it turned out, eventually I thought it's maybe for the better. I thought it was actually quite a good story in the long run. But Edge is back. He's got that babyface fire in his belly again. It's going to be interesting how he explains away his character change leading into WrestleMania season and now coming back as what you'd expect to be a top babyface going up against the top heel of Roman Reigns. But if anyone can do it, it's Edge. He's absolutely fantastic on the microphone, and I'm sure he's thought of some reasoning behind it or some explanation that he can use to go into this. But interested to see, yeah, like I say, how they explain away the Edge character change, and B, what happens with this Jey Uso thing now, because he's been missing, it's 2 weeks now, I think he's been missing off SmackDown. And they've obviously sort of leaned into it and talked about it, and it's added another layer to that storyline that I wasn't really expecting. I didn't see just Jey Uso getting really annoyed and packing his bag and going home as part of this story arc. But I'm kind of into it. I'm willing to see where it goes. Like, we've talked about the Roman Reigns announcement saying he's the best in the world, but also like part of that is just saying how much care and effort he's put into this storyline. And I think it obviously shows being definitely the best thing in WWE and by far the longest storyline they've told in a many, many years, that he's putting all this care and effort into it. So I've got to give them the benefit of the doubt as to where they're going with this. And I'm just intrigued to see what exactly it is.
Yeah, I welcomed that, like the inclusion, the little wrinkle with Jimmy Uso seemingly pledging his allegiance to Roman when we're allowed to believe that maybe that's not the case. Jimmy is trying now to rethink how to deal with this control that Roman has over Jay. Maybe this is what we're getting, a sort of a longer plan from him. I'm interested. WWE have set themselves a challenge, which they never normally do because they book their entire product into oblivion to avoid this kind of challenge. But there was nothing wrong with Roman stacking up Edge and Bryan at WrestleMania. It was a conclusive, satisfying victory for the most dominant man in the company.
Yeah.
They have a challenge on their hands tonight. They can't just fall back on what we all assumed, which would be Daniel Bryan getting pinned to sort of protect Edge for this inevitable rematch, for Edge doing the usual, well, he didn't beat me. And it's like, well, he still won the match that you were in. You just happened not to win it. They didn't give themselves like out of jail free card. And I like that. And I welcome. What it does is it forces creativity. Like, necessity is the mother of invention. And what the necessity here is to actually find a logical reason. Edge has been given the match by Magic Powers. We don't know. Adam Pearce, Sonya Deville, who knows? He's got the match. It's a graphic. It's official. Right? But Knight's job, I guess, for Edge is to convincingly explain why he deserves it. Have you got any thoughts on, like, how they'll work around the fact that they actually committed to something back at WrestleMania?
I honestly think I see him, if he's going to go back into sort of babyface Edge mode, I can see him saying that like his ego or whatever, like got the better of him leading into WrestleMania. And that led to him sort of being overwhelmed by his own emotions or something, which like, it wasn't like the sort of the best that Edge can be at WrestleMania because he had all these other things that is like the emotions around the situation and coming back and having his dream taken away, like put him off his game. And now he's come back, he's sort of reassessed his focus, reassessed like where his head's at, and can now come back at it with a sort of fresh, like open mind kind of thing, with just a sole goal of taking down Roman Reigns. And I think he'll find a way of explaining it around that. I think the other question mark I've got for this as well is Roman teased a big announcement or teased something last week when he was saying like, I've beaten everyone. And it's quite true. He has beaten everyone. He is way like leagues ahead of anyone else on the SmackDown roster at the minute. So like he was teasing something before Edge came back. Do you think we ever go back to that? Or do you think that's just going to be one of those things that gets lost?
The only thing it felt like they were teeing up, and it was obviously teeing up to be interrupted than actually be announced, was that with nobody left to beat, like he doesn't like need the title anymore. He doesn't need to be there anymore. But then that's tricky because if you're going to be the head of the table, you've got to actually sit at the table. Yeah. So I don't know if they, like, my gut feeling was they were wanting us to think that ahead of the music interruption and outcoming Edge, because it's kind of illogical for this character. You could sort of justify it with Brock Lesnar. I've made all the money I need to make and I've beaten everybody and now I'm off. What I do like is that they can, whatever that announcement was going to be, if it was indeed Roman thinking, you know what, I don't need this belt. Like, I don't need any of this now. I've just proven my dominance. It doesn't quite marry up with head of the table tribal chief stuff, but it certainly does marry up if that wants to tease John Cena back for a match at SummerSlam or Brock Lesnar or these other big dream matches that we've heard mooted for Roman over the next few months. So I think that's there for if and when he beats Edge, at least, I guess. I like that pitch for Edge as well. I much prefer that to him just growling spear and rubbing his hands through his hair really quickly. Like, I would like it if they put that level of thought into it. So it's something, I think it's nice that they've, like, yet again, found a sort of, Money in the Bank's not like a B-show in the sense of Hell in a Cell or a WrestleMania Backlash, but they've done a pretty great job of establishing a B-show opponent for a Roman. Like, to think that it's going to be Edge at Money in the Bank means you can think even bigger for SummerSlam, and that's pretty exciting too. Sticking with Money in the Bank, like, I'm with Sami Zayn. WWE have created a ridiculous problem where they've got this conspiracy, like, conspiracy hollering crank that is the voice of reason. Like, that shouldn't happen. Sami Zayn is probably right. He has beaten Kevin Owens, and Money in the Bank passes are just being handed out like sweets by the authority figures, and yet he has to have a last man standing match with the person he's beat just to qualify. Now, we're not here to criticise the quality of a potential last man standing match between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. We've all seen it before, but the quality bar is as such that you can kind of be like, right, okay, I'll get through this one more time because there are stakes attached. What's your feelings on this match, the arrangement of it, the potential quality, and who you think is going to win?
I still think Sami Zayn's got to win this. I mean, there's still been the rumors of Kevin Owens taking a bit of time off. I mean, that lasted 2 weeks before he came back. So whether they just were like, oh, can we do this one last match and then you can have some time off? Like, maybe, or maybe the talks of time off was just either rubbish or just taken away from him at the last minute. Yeah. Who knows? But I still think Sami Zayn needs this more than Kevin Owens does at the minute. And the last man standing match, there's lots of easy outs there for Sami to gain a cheeky win. I was thinking, like, it's only just popped into my head, but, like, I've been imagining situations where, because WWE, whenever they get new sets and things, they always like to destroy the old one somehow and then move on with the new. But there's still a few Thunderdome shows before Money in the Bank. And maybe if this was, like, the last SmackDown before Money in the Bank and you did a big set where, the like, Sami knocks the set down and it traps Kevin Owens or something, that'd be a great way of writing the Thunderdome off and then moving back to crowds with Money in the Bank. But there's still definitely some Thunderdome shows after this, isn't there? So we can't do something big like that.
Yeah, obviously, because they've got to use it for Raw. And, I will say, though, like, that's something I hadn't really considered. Kevin Owens is known for talking about these things in terms of toys, isn't he? Like, he likes to get to play with toys when there's a big match. And Sami Zayn, of course, is the, like, the two of them will probably do anything to each other and give their bodies to each other for the benefit of this meaning something, or at least somebody remembering something from this match. You know, the millionth they've had, it's kind of like here in the middle of, at the start of July, not particularly, like, fertile period for WWE television. So they'll be looking for this to, like, stick out a bit of a desert rose. So, yeah, like, I hadn't really thought about it like that. And I hope, I always go back to Kevin Owens being the first one to run up the Raw skate ramp.
Yeah.
And do that jump. We'd had months of that. And it was like, who's going to actually take a leap at that? And it was Owens, and it was great.
Yeah. So, and then Mount, he was talking about jumping off the pirate ship at WrestleMania and stuff. It's like, he sees these things and he's like, I'm going to do that at some point.
I want to do that, It's, if not complete wanton destruction of the Thunderdome, they can certainly do more of a number on it than Retribution ever did. for the benefit of getting this match over.
I will say as well, like, in terms of Money in the Bank and how the qualifiers have been, it's been so weird across all brands of WWE. It makes no sense. Like, you've got Money in the Bank pay-per-view and it's in a set amount of weeks. It should be the easiest TV to write if just having qualifying matches for it. And then on Raw, they kind of gave away like 75% of the Raw entrants in one show, like 3-4 weeks before Money in the Bank. And then you move over to SmackDown and you think, okay, they're having qualifying matches. This is really good. They've got like one qualifying match a week leading up to Money in the Bank. That's a lot of TV time you can fill and still plug the pay-per-view at the same time. But then on the women's side, they just kind of throw Carmella in there and then make Liv Morgan beat Carmella, who's already in, and then she beats the person who's already in the match to get into it, and it makes absolutely no sense. Like, why is there not just a little bit of set rules for how you get into Money in the Bank, and then keep it as a sort of tournament kind of thing where you have qualifiers, and then you get easy, easy TV time to write leading into it? It seems like a no-brainer, and yet they still manage to complicate it so much.
No-brainer is a perfect choice of words, because there is no brains assembling this Money in the Bank match, like, for this pay-per-view. Let's go to that, actually, because the lack of established ways into this match has made it one of the more convoluted, probably in Money in the Bank history. As you say, Raw's had tag matches, Raw's had last chance triple threats and the like of ways to get in. And SmackDown, I guess it's like in the draft where Raw gets three and SmackDown gets two because you've got less of an hour to play with. So maybe you can say, well, that's why Raw gets more of the match than SmackDown does. But particularly egregious was last week's segment, as you sort of pointed out there, between Carmella and Liv Morgan. As a recap for anybody that didn't see it, Sonya Deville announced that Carmella, as a two-time Money in the Bank winner, was going to be in the match. Perhaps not the best night to do that when you've got Edge returning as a two-time Money in the Bank winner and then him getting a title match instead of getting put into the ladder match as well. Again, absolutely zero consistency across the board. Carmella gets this. In spite of the fact that, and I know wins and losses don't matter in WWE, they don't have rankings, but she just lost to Liv Morgan. I think it was 2 weeks earlier in a singles match. Liv Morgan comes out and makes this point, this very justifiable point. Hold on a second. I want that slot in Money in the Bank. Now, the subtext to all of this is that they both have to get in because they make up the entire SmackDown Women's Division outside of the people fighting for the title and the tag team champions.
I was just going to say that, actually. It just popped into my head that they physically can't do qualifying matches on SmackDown because they've only got seven women. So four of them would be in the match and then you've got three others. So there's not enough people there to do qualifying matches.
It's the whole division.
You can't make up a full Money in the Bank match with the SmackDown Women's roster.
No, it's seen like Carmella and Liv Morgan make up the entire division of people that aren't otherwise engaged in a program yet. And Wikipedia, for some reason, generously has like always allotted Maurice to the SmackDown brand. And I don't imagine she's coming up a ladder anytime soon, which like making far more money off reality TV shows with the Miz and her kids. Yeah, like hugely logical. They weren't even, Liv Morgan won. They weren't super crystal clear about Liv Morgan featuring Money in the Bank to the point where you would find different reports online. We're going to go on the assumption that she has qualified for Money in the Bank as a result of the victory over Carmella. Carmella is not out of the match. She had no motivation to work that match whatsoever. She could have said, I'm not taking bumps, I'll forfeit. Like, if I can't lose anything from this, why would I bother wrestling the match just to stop Liv Morgan? It's fine.
Yeah.
There's still going to be seven other people I've got to contend with. Bailey, we're going to get onto shortly. But there was something else troubling about the Liv Morgan-Carmella match that made no sense. Was that midway through the match, the cameras cut to Natalya and Tamina looking on the screen, as all wrestlers do backstage, from a side angle, holding their belts. Now, is the tag team division so goddamn warped that rather than them looking at teams, they just now think, hang on, those two wrestlers are fighting each other. If there's one thing we know, it's that fighting people team up with each other. Before Money in the Bank, are Liv Morgan and Carmella somehow going to be forced not only to have wrestled each other like three times in 4 weeks, but to team up and try and become tag team champions against Natalya and Phil, explain this to me.
Can't explain it. The only thing I can think of is that Natalya and Tamina, it's like so ingrained in every fiber of their being that they wrestle Liv Morgan and someone else every single week and beat them, that they just see, ooh, Liv Morgan and someone else, let's beat them. that's just what they do, like forever, historically forever, that's all that's happened. SmackDown is in desperate need of some women on this roster at the minute. Like, you've got seven active wrestlers, one is your champion, two are tag team champions. That leaves you five people to do something with, and they've struggled for a long time to get any storylines in the women's roster that don't revolve around the belts. And even when they've revolved them around the belts, they've still been iffy at best recently.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you for mentioning both. Well, thank you for mentioning both the belt and iffy at best as a perfect segue to talk about the end of that mixed tag match last week between Bayley and Seth Rollins versus Bianca Belair and Cesaro. It looked on paper, Hell in a Cell, Seth Rollins had said, oh, that's 1-1, we've leveled up, and you've got that kind of like sinking feeling that they'll have to run a rubber match when the feud is feeling a little bit out of juice. But the match itself seemed perfect in terms of existing for something a little bit fun and something a little bit creative, which I'm not really sure it was. I don't think they made the best use of, like, I was a big advocate of Bianca doing those squat press slams with Seth because she's strong enough, and Cesaro doing the swing on Bayley because it's probably like falls in between what they would consider like intergender violence.
Almost more embarrassing than anything else. Like how Seth sold it was just a huge embarrassment.
It just seemed two perfect spots they elected not to use in that match. It was a big shame. But ultimately, we proved this last week, myself and Wilborn, and it was like, well, at least when the babyfaces win, that's going to completely tie up Bianca and Bayley. It was already tied up, but that puts a bow on it. And it's Cesaro's little, look, I can. Let's have one more. Let's have a decider. Then the frigging heels went over. So you got the reverse of both. You got Seth saying, well, it's 1-1 at the pay-per-view, but I've kind of done it in a tag match. So game over, I'm good, I'm done. And like, I want to talk about Seth in a minute because there was another detail about Seth in last week's SmackDown. So we'll come to the Seth and Cesaro half of this second, but let's talk again because we're just not allowed to talk about anything else about Bayley and Bianca Belair. We love Bayley and Bianca Belair on this podcast across what culture? Of course we do. It's Bayley and Bianca Belair. I don't want to see them wrestle anymore. And by the virtue of this victory, I feel like I'm going to be made to.
Yeah, the sooner we get Sasha back into this mix, the better. Like, I was expecting Hell in a Cell. There's two matches now for the title on pay-per-view that Bayley's lost. That's
so
enough.
Good as well. Hell in a Cell was
it
so
was,
good.
Yeah.
Really good.
And also, it's a bloody Hell in a Cell match. That's blow off. That's it. That's done now, move on to something else. But we're back to the same issue of there not being anyone in that bloody roster on SmackDown. And I just thought, like, as we're counting the people, the seven people, one champion, two are tag team champions, one Sasha, she hasn't even been there for a bunch of months.
I mentioned this to Wilborn. Sasha will have had as long off this year as she did in 2019 when there was a good chance she was going to walk away.
Oh, God.
Like, she's gone from them thinking, oh, we can just have her lose at WrestleMania, we don't care about her, to knowing her value so much that she can leave under no cloud and get the exact amount of time off. Like, she's a genius. She's played an absolute blunder.
Incredible. I was always just expecting the next leg of this storyline to be the triple threat match between the three of them, because it kind of makes sense. You've got the tie-in with Bayley and Sasha. Neither of them have beaten Bianca. And I guess Bianca wins and then that's it. Like, move on to something fresh. But there is nothing new. There is nothing to move on to. So they've got themselves stuck in this little corner of just having to repeat themselves, even though they've just had this massive blow-off match in a Hell in a Cell that should definitely end a feud. And Bayley has no right to expect another match apart from winning this intergender tag match on SmackDown. Just doesn't make any sense.
I could honestly see Bayley... She's such a like a polymath of a performer at this point, as has been required of her. Like, I could honestly see them doing something like her, like wrangling one more shot that nobody, like a match nobody wants to see for Money in the Bank. But then it's not a match. Bianca rolls her up in like 4 seconds or something and like hands together. Like, I already thought it was finished with you. Now, absolute conclusive proof that I am finished with you. And then Bayley like forces her way into Money in the Bank later on the card. Like, either she beats somebody up backstage, or she, like, there was a mystery spot, or she just becomes the ninth person in an 8-1 match, whatever. Like, yeah. It's this, like, it becomes this, like, desperation. And, like, that, she doesn't even need to win the case, but that at least sidelines Bayley's character off in a different direction from Belair herself. I cannot see them trying to sell us on, like, a 15-minute television, we promise this is the end match, because it just doesn't feel, it doesn't feel real, does it?
Yeah. No, I like that.
On that tick, we have to get back to Seth and Cesaro. It's much the Owen Zayn thing. I get why people say things like, well, I wouldn't get bored of seeing them wrestle. But, like, really ask that question. Like, it's okay to be bored of watching them wrestle. Because even artists like Rollins and especially Cesaro are, like, it is okay to get bored of combinations, even if you like the wrestlers. And bored of stories. And I think they've done everything. Like, they did the humiliation of the swing before WrestleMania. Cesaro felt made. They transitioned him into a one-month thing with Roman. Seth fumed. Yeah. Like, turned, destroyed him, looked evil, went silly again. And they had this decent, but, like, I'd say slightly underwhelming match at Hell in a Cell, like a singles match. It, like, 1-1 means you need a decider. I think you have to go for something like an Iron Man match, maybe.
Or 2 out of 3 falls. They seem to like doing something like that.
Yeah, something that, again, like, gives you the, like, holds up the veneer of something being conclusive.
Yeah.
But we're not there yet. So what else is there really left to say between these two that's going to get us there?
Yeah, that's the issue, I think, with this, is the actual storyline of the week to week actually getting to this final sort of rubber match. It felt like when it started that this was a really good 1 month feud and like a stepping stone for Cesaro. And like you say, then he moved on to Roman Reigns. But then it's, I guess, maybe sort of a byproduct of the sort of Roman being so at the top of his game and at the top of this card is that once you do fail to Roman, then what? And like we talk about the women's roster on SmackDown being thin, like the men's roster only has like 20 people, I think, on it. It's like a tiny roster, really, when you think of how, what WWE roster sizes have been in the past. It's absolutely tiny. So yeah, you've got that step back, and then there's nothing there. There's not like another layer, really, of performers to go into. So you go back to this third thing. He gets his win. At least for this, I think Cesaro winning, hopefully decisively, over Seth at Money in the Bank with fans back, gets Cesaro a nice big babyface reaction, and then hopefully. But I don't see what's next, what's after that. I don't know how they get their storyline. Hopefully Seth just stops laughing, because laughing isn't writing. Let's face it, and we can stay away from all this laughter nonsense forever now. I've done that. But like, even if he does beat Seth, then what?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately for Cesaro, you sense it's always just going to be that one step forward, two back, one step forward, two back. For, like, forever and ever and ever, and you hope that he's just at least paid handsomely to do it.
Yeah.
They dropped a little crumb on last week's episode when Seth Rollins, this was obviously before the reveal of Edge, went backstage and kind of hassled Pierce and Deville for the next match against Roman, ultimately. I said that by the virtue of the win on that show, as well as the win at Hell in a Cell, that it's got to be him. And then it was interesting that they kind of alluded to, oh, we've got someone else in mind. And then you get that Edge return at the end. And it's after Paul Heyman has ran down the list of everybody they've beat, which of course doesn't include Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
This is quite nice, actually, because I feel like this will ultimately get us to Seth and Edge at SummerSlam, yeah. I mean, that rumoured match, which, you know, like, really it's fresh, but I think a few people will enjoy the fact that a million billion years ago in WWE terms, Edge once threatened to re-break Edge's neck. I mean, it's like 2015. Like, I'm a patient man with Sasha and Bayley, but even that's like, you kind of have to draw a line and be like, right, this is a new story. But people will like that. People, I think, will, and it's just an interesting combination. It's more of Edge fighting the people that are new to him rather than Randy Orton or people that you'd already fought.
It's more of the dream matches that when you think of a possible Edge comeback, these are the people that you think of.
Yeah, that's it. So I think that's like, that's definitely SummerSlam worthy. But it also perhaps tees up Seth as an interesting post-SummerSlam opponent for Roman as well. So like, if not particularly with Cesaro, I'm kind of curious to see if they try and pepper any of that in between now and, I guess now and Money in the Bank when Seth pivots to, like the end of Money in the Bank when Seth pivots to Edge. I wonder if we'll see a little bit more of Seth's aspirations creeping out in the midst of the Cesaro thing.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. I think that's a good shout. Like, I think just Seth versus Roman at some point on a sort of B pay-per-view after SummerSlam is an interesting prospect anyway, because we've seen a lot of pure babyface fire going up against Roman Reigns. It'd be interesting to see how this sort of Seth Rollins kind of crazy, like, hyping himself, like, character works against Roman Reigns, and especially with the history that they'll end up playing off. I think it could be quite interesting, especially if Roman Reigns ends up kind of swatting him away and going, like, what the hell are you doing, you pathetic little man, kind of thing. Which would then feed into...
You're used to fighting even more baby faces. I'm a complete dickhead. You haven't had a challenge like me before.
Yeah. And then if Roman does just completely swat him away, that'll feed into Seth Rollins just, like... just forgetting about every like actual outside thing that's happened and just like going internally and going, oh my god, like I'm the best in a way, but he has to then prove it so much because he's been defeated on such a high level.
I think that's really intriguing chemistry. People look like, this is what happens when you actually get acts over. People will forever love the Shield, and you bring those two together and there's just that like sort of electricity, because the Shield meant something to people. And I think whenever they come together, there's that little bit of spark. And Seth Rollins can always say, I don't know where you were last year, but I took a guy's eye out. What were you? So he's got that in his back pocket as well. Right. I've been putting off getting to this. we're going to end this podcast not on a high, but the lowest of lows. Last week, Baron Corbin, no longer King Corbin, obviously. Nakamura looked amazing in that white gear, so I hope that becomes his wrestling attire for a while.
I genuinely loved that segment with Shinsuke and Bue. like 5 minutes of them just rocking out being idiots. I'm fine with that.
It was long, but I certainly...
It was a little bit long.
It had its charm. It had its style. But yes, we cut to the back. Kayla, I believe it was, speaking to, getting King Corbin's name wrong. Sorry, Baron Corbin now. Baron Corbin. And the whole thing was, he was droopy. He had a hangdog expression. He was a sad clown, wasn't he? Because he'd lost his crown. You thought they were probably going to like hit this over the next few weeks. Maybe you were going to see. Remember that time that Seth came out, like looking bedraggled after he'd lost to Drew McIntyre, I think it was. And hilariously, after Becky Lynch didn't know she was pregnant. Like, Seth came out, like, hair all over the shop, just, like, was in no mood for anything. You thought maybe that was where they were going to go with Baron Corbin. You thought wrong, because news broke this week that WWE have filed a trademark for Happy Corbin. Look, this time, a couple of years ago, one of the best wrestlers in the company started wearing Space Jam clothes, and... Infamously, the G was a ruler. Are we going to get Baron Corbin's face? Only it's not a face. It's like the smiling yellow emoji slapped across his vest or across his tights, something like that. Is this going to be what Nakamura calls Baron Corbin in that, like, I was going to say get the crowds to sing along. It's not even that. They're going to have to set up happycorbin.wav as like the big fan echoes around the Thunderdome. Like, so Baron Corbin's got to cover his ears backstage because he's so sad. And everybody's going, Happy Corbin. Like, what's going on?
I have no idea. Like, you bring up Shorty G. I was going to bring him up as well because it seems very much like the same kind of trajectory, like almost in terms of gimmicks, just in a sort of opposite manner. But, I mean, Corbin's, he's had a weird time of it on SmackDown. Like, we all remember the sort of dog food incidents with Roman Reigns and the people dressing up as dogs and things. And then he was quite a pivotal part in the whole Shorty G situation. Obviously, the King thing ran its course way too long. And I'm kind of glad that's over now, to be honest. But not that long ago, they were teasing about like a sort of big money Corbin kind of character where he's just arrogant and rich and a bit of a douchebag. And I think that would kind of fit him. And I don't know why they never did more with that. Like, they teased after, was it the Knights of the Corbin or whatever?
That's right. Yeah, of course, before they both got
sucked. Yeah, because they went and then they had to rethink everything. So he was like wearing the fancy watches and the fancy suit and stuff. And it only lasted like a couple of weeks before they reverted back to the King shtick. And I don't know why they never ran down that line, because it seems like much more easy fit with Corbin as a personality than whatever Happy Corbin is going to be. But Vince McMahon has his little play figures and he likes to make them act out stupid things. And this is just going to be the latest in a long line of this.
It's strange because, like, you know, I know Baron Corbin's not a very popular figure amongst a lot of wrestling fans, but he kind of you know, he lives this man from Del Monte life outside of wrestling, and it's a life that wrestling has afforded him. Ironically, yeah. Happy Corbin is how I would describe his social media presence.
He's absolutely, yeah, with his barbecues and
steaks and buys watches. Like, he's pretty content with his lot. I just don't sense maybe that's going to travel onto the billion-dollar wrestling show, Phil, every Friday on Fox. What are your thoughts on Happy Corbin? If you've got any, please genuinely let us know. Do some Photoshop mock-ups for all I care. I want to see them. Let us know what culture WWE. If you would like to follow either of us, you can find Phil Chambers on Twitter at
Phil My Chambers, and you can follow Hamflet at
Michael Hamflet. Tune in any more of these What Culture podcasts. I always forget how Wilborn wraps this up. So I'll just say again, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get them. And we will see you soon.
Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.